I am speaking with current County Commission Chair Bill Novotny, who is also running for County Commission again this year. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon, Aaron, and thanks for the opportunity to speak to 307 Net Radio about this race.
Okay. Let's get started. We have a bunch of questions that we've asked all of the other candidates, but of course, with you being an incumbent, we have some other ones. And the first thing is, we want to address the elephant in the room.
Absolutely. Okay.
So many people in the community are concerned about the incident last summer, and serious one, driving with an open container, driving the wrong way on the interstate, difficulty in apprehension, blood alcohol level at whatever. We know the story. So furthermore, you were released from the detention on a Sunday afternoon, and that's extremely unusual. And what do you say to people who have said or think that your offense itself disqualifies you from representing Johnson County?
Well, first and foremost, as I said after the incident, I apologize profusely to my constituents for letting them down. I want to be clear that I didn't receive any special treatment. It was handled by an outside prosecutor so that the Johnson County Attorney's Office could maintain their independence and the integrity of that office. That's what typically is done. I know that there is an individual who is claiming otherwise in social media, and that's really unfortunate. I take full responsibility. I'm working to be a better person from this incident. And again, I just offer my sincerest apologies to my constituents and anyone that I've let down. I work hard every day on their behalf to make this the best county that ever. This is not something that disqualifies me from being able to run for office. And ultimately, the voters of Johnson County will have the decision, which is the way it should be. I hope they will evaluate my record as a county commissioner and what I've been able to accomplish for this county, the problems that I have had to face, whether it was the budget, delinquent taxpayers, different efforts to improve the quality of life here in the face of declining revenue. So I'm just going to leave it at that, but I do appreciate the opportunity to address it head on. Thank you.
Okay. That answered two questions there that I was going to ask. One quick one, though. There has been some allegations, or have been allegations, that you've been seen breaking conditions of your probation by being around alcohol, and also some have accused you of drinking in public. What's your response?
Those are incorrect, and attending the Republican Women's Forum and things like that, that's just not correct. So,
okay, very good. That's out of the way. Thank you very much for addressing that.
Very
appreciate it. Okay, let's get started with the questions about the office. Why are you running again?
Well, I really approach the decision to run again, and there are several projects that are ongoing that I'd like to see completed before I feel that I can hand over this job and feel like I've done what I set out to do when I initially ran. I also believe that we're at a critical time of transition in the courthouse. You are going to be losing a county commissioner with Linda Greeno's retirement. The longtime county clerk, Vicki Edelman, who really is the unsung hero of how the county operates, is also going to be retiring. There's some senior staff in her office that is also considering retiring because, frankly, a lot of the workforce in the county is at that point where that they are ready to enjoy their golden days and retire. And so it is really critical that we have someone that understands the budget process, how the county has to interact with the legislature, because all county operations are extensions of directions from the Wyoming legislature, because we're an extension of the state. We're not like cities that have home rule and have the ability to set their own ordinances. So we rely a lot on what the statutes say or may or shall, or when the statutes are silent on things. So between the understanding of the budget, how the revenue streams work, and just providing that continuity of leadership on the commission, really, along with just the incredible encouragement that I received from folks around the community saying that they appreciated what I've done and they want me to continue. And so that really is the motivation. I love this community. I am passionate about serving this community. And I think when I hit the point where it either I'm not effective or that it's just time for a change, then I look forward to going back to the private sector and being the entrepreneur that I've always really enjoyed being.
Fair enough. Okay. How do you, how do you feel that you're prepared and qualified for office already? And what will we'll follow up? We'll stop there.
Well, I came into the role of county commissioner with a very unique resume, having worked for a U.S. senator and some other experiences, whether it was a community lender, petroleum landman, heck, to live in Buffalo. I've painted houses and waited tables because if you love this community, you'll do whatever you can to be here. So I think that my educational background and my career experience allowed me to be prepared to take on the role of county commissioner. And then once you get into that role, there really is no on-the-job training or manual. You are thrown in and you're given some brief education through the County Commissioners Association and support from the other commissioners. We were very fortunate when I was first elected that we had a commissioner that had been on the board. And so there was some institutional knowledge there. But really, it is incumbent upon you to learn the job and study and put in the time to be an effective commissioner.
Okay. What, if any, other skills do you feel that you would like to have with the county commission?
You know, I'm constantly learning, and I consider myself a pretty voracious reader, and you're scouring over the statutes. I've really started to take advantage of some of the educational opportunities that the National Association of Counties provides. I was not a big fan or user of the content that they were putting out initially, but now I've found as we are dealing with different federal programs and essentially new potential sources of revenue to pay for infrastructure projects and other things, that additional, whether it's the webinars or the white papers that they write, are really invaluable to me.
County commissioners are the CEOs for the county or of the county. Big responsibility. What do you think are the most important qualities and skills that the county commission should have to best run the office?
You know, first and foremost, when you come in, and I don't ever like an individual says, oh, I don't have an agenda. When you come in as a county commissioner, your agenda should be what is best for Johnson County. You cannot allow personal interests to influence your judgment because ultimately you're trying to do what is best for all the citizens of the Johnson County. It's critical of confidentiality. We are the plan administrators for our health care policy as an example. So there's information that you know about employees that you absolutely have to keep confidential. Confidentiality with several of the lawsuits that we are involved in. So those two things, that impartiality and then the willingness to listen first and foremost, you need to listen to your constituents, gather the good information so that you can make those good informed decisions. So those are really kind of the things I think that are those qualities that make a good commissioner.
Okay. Talk us through, even though it's not a typical day as a county commissioner, but basically that. Talk us through what your day is like. Explain to the voters exactly what you do, you know, in a quote-unquote typical day.
And by state statute, a county commissioner is a part-time job. It's a part-time, full-time job. Start out in the morning early, checking emails. I try to go into the commissioner's office in the morning to, if there's documents that need to be signed, things that are reviewed, then maybe you have a meeting with a department head or you're fielding constituent calls. You break away to run to the grocery store over the noon hour to grab something for dinner that night, and you're probably going to get stopped by somebody who has a question or a concern about a county road or a policy. So it's that being available, and I field a lot of calls during the day and during the night of people that have concerns over either what's being done with something or pointing out things that they would like to see done within the county. So it really is a 24/7 job that luckily I've been able to find some flexibility with things in other projects so that I can devote the majority of my time, to being an effective full-time, essentially, county commissioner working on issues. I'm very involved with the WCCA, so whether it's helping supervise the staff that we have there, getting pulled in on different calls and meetings with either members of the legislature, the legislative leadership there, or folks from the governor's offices, things are coming up. So it really, there isn't a typical day. But it is certainly, it is not a part-time job by any stretch of the word. And I thoroughly love and enjoy it.
Leads right into my next question. What is it about being a county commissioner that appeals to you, that you want to continue to do it?
This is the most local and most effective form of government there is, because it is absolutely closest to the people. So if you are concerned that the road and bridge department has not mowed the side of the road because you're worried about hitting a deer as you go home, you can call your commissioner and I can probably get that problem addressed. Sometimes it's things that are bigger than that or are going to take longer range planning or longer range type of goals. But it really is that you can really assist people in their problems. You know, one of the things that we are now about to start in as soon as the clerk's office can get a hearing officer in place is the Board of Equalization will meet to hear individuals with property tax protests, and I take that role extremely important. I have studied the process, studied the statutes, and so that our taxpayers can have a fair and impartial hearing when they come to it. And these are just kind of all those different things that you don't. And I know that was a little of an aside from where we were going, but I just thought of, you know, make sure we got the BOE teed up because people are ready to have those. And property taxes are on the minds of everyone right now.
I was going to bring that up, and you did. So let's talk about this because I know it's a problem throughout the state with property taxes going through the roof. And I think, I don't even know what the average is in Johnson County, but I've heard anywhere from 20 to 50% increase in 1 year. So obviously, like you said, everyone is concerned about that. And there's really not a whole lot that can be done on the county level to change that because it's the state legislature that's responsible for that. But my question is, how do you as a county commissioner take that to the legislature or prompt them to do something? Or can you?
I really think we can achieve a solution. And it gets back to the way that we approached fixing problems with ad valorem tax. We built a broad-based coalition of counties. We involved the assessors. We involved the treasurer. So we got all the stakeholders in there. Plus, we got industry. In the case of property taxes, you're going to really be looking at a two-pronged approach. If we're going to cap the annual rate of increase, that's going to take a constitutional change. As I've been looking at the issue and have been visiting with people more, I think the more proactive solution right out of the gun would be to go in to statute and amend, because presently there are three classifications of property, change that to five so that homes would sit in its own class now and lower that tax rate on them from they're presently taxed at 9%, lower that to 8 or even 7. That would bring real relief to people relatively fast. That's something that the legislature could sign and make it retroactive to a property tax year if they so chose, or they could have it go into effect upon signature of the governor. So that is, I think, as I talk to more people about it, and again, you've got to involve the assessors. You've got to involve the treasurers because they're so intimately involved in the process of assessment to property tax collection. And so when those voices aren't there, just as when people are talking about election integrity and they forget to talk to their local county clerks, who are the people who actually put the elections on, that's how that property tax solutions happen is that broad-based coalition that involves commissioners, because it is our duty under the statutes to collect those. So I think that's where we'll be involved, and I really look forward to working on that challenge.
Okay. You mentioned retroactively. Define that for me, because when I think retroactively, if the legislature was to do that and set it back to, say, 2019 levels, that would be moving forward from that point. You couldn't actually go back and refund that money to the people from, say, 2021-22 tax year, correct?
I don't think you could reach back probably beyond the current tax year.
Sure, okay.
Because we're going to have people that are going to make a choice of they're going to either pay their property taxes in one installment or in two. So there is a chance that before some current taxpayers have paid that second installment of their property taxes, the legislature has going to have met and potentially could have taken action. So there could potentially be some relief there. You know, I was very pleased that this year the legislature actually fully funded the property tax relief program that some folks were going to be, because in the past they haven't funded. In the past they have not funded the veterans tax exemption. And so when veterans come in and claim that, they get their rebate and refund out of that. But once the state's out of money for that program, then actually the counties eat the problem. And I have no problem if we've got to find a way to make sure that our veterans are made whole. But it's just interesting that, you know, you've got legislators that are really talking about poverty tax relief, and they forget about that you need to fully fund the programs that are on the books that are presently available to taxpayers.
Okay, that makes sense. As the incumbent seeking re-election, what do you specifically want to accomplish in these next few years if elected?
It's that smooth transition over to the monthly ad valorem tax system. We're now basically 5 months into the system, but really only 3 months of tax collection, because they you got your January production, and then they had a month to do the accounting, and then they didn't remit payment until actually the third month. So we've gone from 18 months now, really, we're 3 months in arrears. But getting us fully transitioned over to that, the Craig report, which a lot of people are familiar of, is going to start to, and that's the Consensus Revenue Estimating Group, for people who aren't familiar with the acronym, are going to start to put out a small guidance to counties, because we're going to have to learn to budget now in a system that is a lot more volatile if you're in a county that has a lot of commodities, whether it's oil, gas. We hopefully at some point we'll see uranium sales out of Johnson County again, but bentonite, gravel, those things that are going to produce here. So instead of it being done 18 months and knowing exactly what it is, it's now going to be more closely following the market. So just as the state sees ups and downs in those commodity prices, we'll do those, and we may get halfway through the fiscal year and you may have to make adjustments to the budget, because the Craig report is showing us that revenue is going to be falling behind what was initially projected when they certified what your county's valuation is. So that is going to be a big part of it. The other thing is that continued need to invest in our employees. And as we look at the help wanted signs around our community in all industries, the county isn't immune. And we have some positions in the county that have sat vacant because either we weren't offering a competitive wage, a wage that was actually livable in this community with these housing prices, or that just there was not anybody that wanted to take that position. And so looking at how we make sure that, because the county only runs if we've got great people able there to provide the services, whether it's recording that deed or that mortgage or helping with something out of the planning department or the road and bridge department. If there's not operators to run those motor graders, they don't do us a lot of good sitting in the yard. And so we've got to continue to make sure. And our employees tightened their belts when the county had to, and they didn't have a raise or a cost of living increase for a long time. And so in this budget, we're going to be able to do that. We have in the past covered the increases that the state has required in retirement. And also we've covered as the cost of health insurance for our employees has gone up. We have covered that with the county dollars out of the budget rather than having our employees see less money in their paycheck take home. So I'm proud that we've been able to do that. I wish we could do more for our employees because we've got great employees. A lot of employees that have been with the county for a long time. And so that dealing with that tax transition, the continuity of operations, those are really things that I'll be focused on as we move into the new year.
Okay. What do you see as significant challenges and where are your areas of focus?
Back to that mineral tax collection, and we've got a settlement in place. We've got to get it approved by the bankruptcy court and get that money freed up. I'm going to be joining Treasurer Faircloth with a call with our bankruptcy attorney after we get done here to go over some stuff that doesn't directly involve us, but it involves some of the other debtors that are in a mediation with Carbon Creek and Powder River Midstream. So obviously getting that settled and finally put to rest is a challenge. If you look at the socioeconomic demographics of Johnson County, we are aging. So we're going to have challenges with providing services to the folks within our community, whether it's beds in the nursing home, staff to work nursing homes, hospitals, the two private assisted living facilities in town, as well as even attracting that new young teacher to come in or that new young nurse to this community. So I see those as real challenges. You know, we've got a very great community that is very livable. We have incredible access to recreational opportunities, but if there is nowhere to live, what good is that trail system? And so really some challenges that are going to have to be looked at. And especially when it comes to housing, the first questions we need to do is ask the private sector, what are the barriers? Because the government isn't going to solve the housing crisis. The private sector is. How can we get the barriers out of the way so that there is a product that people can either purchase or rent that is readily available?
Okay. You brought this up, and that was kind of my next question, or one of them down here, so we'll go ahead and hit that. We're struggling currently, the world actually, but we have an economic downturn, and that leads to an unpredictable future. So how do you see, what is the approach to manage these things, short-term, medium, and long-term?
Well, perfect example. We're trying to finalize the budget, and do you budget that diesel fuel is going to be $5, $6, or $8 to get us to the end of the fiscal year? And so maybe it's establishing some new emergency reserve accounts, because what I don't want to see is growth in the budget that then can't be brought out should things change. I really hope that this isn't the new normal for the price of tires, the price of paper, all of these input things that we use in county operations. And so, you know, it's planning for those through the budget process. We're in good positions with our reserves. I'm very pleased that we've grown the corpus of the Lake de Smit account so that that is basically run off of the interest off of that. And I would hope that we never get into a situation where we have some sort of catastrophic failure out there, but we've got that money available if we needed to tap it or use that money to leverage for a grant match with the Wyoming Water Development Commission for something out there if we had a valve fail or a leaking issue. So trying to get all of those things in place. We've got some additional, we call them perpetual funds. They're little trust accounts for county buildings. You know, we have a lovely, lovely courthouse built in the late 1800s. You know, things like adding insulation to the attic that we discovered after an energy audit, that things that were just never done. So trying to find also those ways to create savings for the county by just being more efficient. We are at some point in the very near future, I'm looking at the museum building, the the old Carnegie Library, those stones are going to be need to be repointed so that we can protect that building and so that we can continue to use it. So it's kind of that long-range plan. We've got a great long-range plan that looks out 8 to 10 years for our road and bridge department on our projects, our road record remediation, because what we have found is that when things were surveyed in the late 1800s, early 1900s, about where the county road was going to go, don't quite match where the county road lies now. And so we work on that, and then also just being smart in the planning of the equipment that we have there. You know, those big pieces of equipment are expensive. And so planning, and luckily this year we were able to get a change in state statute so that we can use some of the money that goes into what's called the County Road Fund, which is money that comes from the state back here that is a collection of gas tax that comes with some very, very strict limits on what it can be used for. And one of the things that we were able to get a concession from the legislature and get an addition to the law was that this year that we could start setting aside $100,000 from the County Road Fund dollars towards the purchase of road graders. And we hope that once the legislature sees that we're doing things smartly with our County Road Fund and use of those dollars, that they'll expand things. So maybe we can buy rollers and front end loaders and other pieces of paving equipment that would be very, very helpful. So it's all of those different challenges and opportunities. And the other, we have growth here. This is a very desirable place to live. It's a little challenging because we don't have zoning. One of the things that we can do is update our county land use plan that hasn't been done since 2005. We are going to do that starting hopefully this fall. There's money in the budget to help pay for that because it's going to be a process, because you have to have some work sessions and open meetings and work with some consultants. And there's been some changes in state law. There's also been a couple Supreme Court rulings that are going to impact how that gets written. And so that's going to be a long process. And that document is only going to be as good as the people who are willing to serve in that process and provide comment. And, you know, we were able to work with the University of Wyoming to update our socioeconomic profile for the county. The state legislature, at the request of the governor, gave us money to update our natural resource plan, which we have already used in a couple instances to point out to the Biden administration that things that they were doing were in violation of NEPA. And counties have the unique status that we have cooperating agency status with all of the federal land management agencies. So we are, by National Environmental Policy Act, supposed to be consulted on all of their plans and their decisions and have a seat at the table during that process. And so that tool allows us to say, hey, this is what we adopted, this is what we believe, or this is how this affects our local economy, and you're running counter to that. And those are really great tools that I think a lot of times get overlooked.
Very good. Okay. I understood that you, or understand that you were in Cheyenne last couple of days.
Was, yes.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because that's kind of been an issue that people are discussing. Not a bad one, but you went down there to talk to some legislators, and I'm assuming to back Sheridan Memorial Hospital's plan to put in a mental health facility at their facility up there, correct?
It is, and we went and met with the governor, his health policy advisor, and his chief policy officer, and I was invited at the request of the chair of the Sheridan Hospital, as well as a member of their county commission, and this is the crisis stabilization unit. And so when an individual has a mental health emergency, usually their first point of contact is either with first responders, whether it's EMS or law enforcement, or they end up in our local emergency room. At that point, when they are determined that they are a detriment to themselves, they can be what is called Title 25, which is a section of the state statute where they actually become a ward of the county then, and the county attorney is responsible for their safety. And so we can then initiate a hold period where in the past people get transferred to Wyoming Behavioral Institute in Casper. we haven't had a lot of success at times in getting beds at Wyoming Behavioral. And so we end up with situations where you have someone who is in a mental health emergency sitting in our emergency room or being put into an ICU bed there. We have to take a member of law enforcement and station them there to watch. Our incredible medical staff here that takes their focus off of being able to respond to normal patients plus any other emergencies that come in through the emergency room, and times they aren't able to get the people what they need, whether it's to get them back onto their medication, to get them with a counselor or psychologist to work through what the crisis is. And so what this would do, and it's based off of an empath model, and so there would be a front door to this unit where, just like the emergency room, but instead of, it would be a mental health emergency room where it is set up to handle those type of situations. With that then also comes 8 adult beds and 2 beds for children that if the medical professionals determined that you needed to hold someone to help protect them, then those would be available. And we had looked at this in 2016 with Northern Wyoming Mental Health and putting a facility up there, but it just wasn't financially feasible, and we weren't sure how we were going to staff it. So this got shelved. And so when there were funds set aside in this budget for regional crisis stabilization units, and Sheridan Hospital had the plan, and I'm in talking to the doctors here as well as Luke, the administrator, they are very supportive of this. The chief of police, the sheriff, the county attorney are all very, very supportive of this, because when we are dealing with people in crisis, we want to do everything we can to protect them. And this would be a tool. Now, it could be filled up, and we're not going to be guaranteed a bed just because we helped get it constructed, because they will take people as they come in. But, we have a severe shortage of mental health beds across the state, and this is going to help us start to address the problem. And so we had a very productive meeting with the governor, and we're going to help Sheridan as they work through their SLIB application to get the dollars for this. And we're going to hope that in 2024, this facility will be ready to receive patients.
Very good. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
One last question.
Absolutely.
Okay. Looking at the county commission now and the way things are done, what would you like to see done differently if you are reelected, if anything?
I'm really proud of the commissioners that I have had the opportunity to serve with. And what is great is that everybody kind of fills a unique role based off of the strengths that they have. And so, we treat each other with the utmost respect. It's a good working relationship, which enables us to solve problems and work on whether it's budget issues or any myriad of things that have come up. Right now, we're dealing with the merger of Northern Wyoming Mental Health and Veterans of America. And so just all of these things that pop up out of the blue. And so I really hope that whoever joins the commission next year, that they can take the seat that Linda has held so well over the last few years and run with the things. And, within the Wyoming County Commissioners Association, there are committees. And so if there's an area that you want to work on as a commissioner, she serves on labor health. I'm on revenue. Commissioner Perry is on transportation. You can kind of find that niche for the skills that you're going to bring. And so I just hope that we can continue that. We're going to have to build a new relationship with the county clerk, because of the job of the clerk and the commissioners are so intertwined. And so we hope that we'll be able to help that transition as Vicki rides off into the sunset in that very well-deserved retirement and the chance to go see her grandkids in Nebraska. That it's a smooth transition, that services that people expect when they step into the counter there, that the level of services is continues, and that things are recorded in a timely manner, and all of those things that make commerce work in this county. So those are really what I'm looking forward to. And I just would ask the voters to take a look at what I've been able to accomplish over my term. And please, I'd ask for their vote on the 16th, or if they use early voting to get in there, because the early voting started today.
Well, you answered my last question. I was going to give you an opportunity to hit the voters, and you just did.
Glad to. So thanks very much for this opportunity to speak with folks, and we'll see you out in the community.
Okay. That's County Commissioner Bill Novotny, who is running again for County Commission in this year's election. Thank you.